Hello, this is Dolores Cannon, and I've been asked to do a series of shows based on the work that I do. And I've been involved in the paranormal and the strange and the unusual for about 40 years, so there's a great deal of work that I'll be able to talk about. So I know I'll be able to cover a great deal in the next shows that to come. The main thing I want to make clear today is what I do and how I get my information so that people will be able to follow it through. I've written 14 books dealing with my adventures in the paranormal and the strange and the unusual, and I'm still working on more. It just seems to keep coming. And I travel all over the world giving lectures and seminars and speaking at conferences and expos. And it just seems like it keeps growing and growing, because everywhere I go, even in other countries, there are huge crowds of people that come to the lectures. People in this little town where I live, they always say, well, where do you find anyone who could be interested in these things? Because I'm in the Bible Belt. They don't understand it anyway. And then they say, where can you find anyone who is interested in listening to these strange ideas? I tell them, you don't have any idea, because all over the world there is just hundreds and hundreds of people that are into metaphysics, and it seems to be growing. More and more are coming into these things and beginning to ask questions and want to know what is going on out there. I think we have realized finally that religion doesn't have all of the answers. The science definitely doesn't have all the answers. There's a lot that cannot be explained by logic and examination, numbers, the way they try to do. They usually, like with religion, just says, just listen to what we say and don't ask questions. You're not supposed to ask questions. But there are more and more people who are asking questions. They want to know what it's all about. They don't want to take what they've been told for years and years. They want to know more, so they are branching out. This doesn't mean we have to leave church behind, because I feel we can combine the two and just go on and add to it. And if people, if they're happy with their beliefs and in their church system, that's fine. That's where they are, where they're at. But whenever they begin to ask questions and want to know more, then the answers are there, and they're beginning to stretch their minds and stretch their belief systems to move out into, I guess you would say, the cosmos, or out into the other realms of reality. But first, I want to explain what it is that I do. Because I'm involved in so many strange things, and I've written 14 books dealing with these things, a lot of people think that I channel or that I'm a psychic. I'm not. I am a hypnotherapist. I've been doing hypnosis for 40 years. I became involved with it many, many years ago. But what I specialize in is past life therapy, past life regression and past life therapy. This is where you take the people back into the other lifetimes to find the answers to the problems in this lifetime. Many times people have been going to doctors and to psychiatrists, and they've had problems all their life, and they cannot find answers for it. And they're at their wit's end, and I guess then we become the last resort whenever they want to come to a past life therapist or a hypnotist, because the doctors are sure not going to encourage them, especially the psychiatrist, to choose this route. But most of the time, the reasons why they can't find the answers is because they're focusing on this life. And after years of trying, the answers are not in this life. Because with reincarnation, we come back again and again. A lot of the things that have happened to us in the other lives are carried over into this life. We can have I guess you would say overlays. We can have residual effects, things that carry over and are just deposited into this life, creating problems. Especially, I found the way the person died in another lifetime. This can be very traumatic in their subconscious mind and carry over into this life, like phobias, allergies. Phobias would be easy to understand. If you have fear of water, fear of heights, fear of fire, you can see that it could relate back to the way the person died in another lifetime. And it causes the trauma to continue into this lifetime. These are what I work with because I found that the answers are there. I found a whole lot of things that most people don't even realize. But let me go back to the beginning and explain how I got into this. I actually got involved in hypnosis 40 years ago. It was in the late 1960s, a long time ago. And in those days, it was what was called normal hypnosis. I was involved with helping people quit smoking, lose weight, what we consider the normal use of hypnosis. My husband was helping me at that time. We were working on these things together. And at that time, there were no books written on past life therapy. It was just the ordinary hypnosis. Now, my husband was in the Navy. We were stationed down in Texas. He had been in the Navy for 21 years. He was career Navy. He had been in Vietnam, and he had just been back a year or so. He was over there about 3 years, one of the first aircraft carriers to go over when the Vietnam War first began. So he was there at the beginning. He was a radar controller on board the aircraft carriers. So he had come back, and we were stationed in Texas, and it was like trying to get your lives back to normal after the disruption. And he knew what I was doing with an ordinary hypnosis, and sometimes he would help me with these things. Well, as I said, I was doing the normal hypnosis, and this doctor on the base, they had a patient who was one of the Navy wives who was very overweight, and she was into overeating. And he knew it was affecting her case, and he thought maybe if we can get her to relax, and the hypnosis might help her with that, it would help her a lot more than the medications that he had her on. If we could just get her to relax and to go with that type of hypnosis. So that's what we were going to try to do. And then everything got very strange, and it was something totally unexpected. But as we were working with her, we decided to take her back into her childhood, maybe to help find out the cause of why she wanted to overeat and what was happening, just to go back to see her childhood life. When we were working with this, she suddenly jumped into a past life. And it was in Chicago during the Roaring Twenties, where she was a flapper and living with the gangsters. And he's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Because she definitely wasn't alive in those times. What in the world? What did we get here? And she became this very flamboyant woman and describing the times and talking about her big black car and all of this. And we're looking at each other, what's going on here? This is what started the first adventure because it's the first time we had been exposed to something like this. Now, I had always been interested in the paranormal most of my life. I knew it existed. I believed in these things, but I'd never really read a lot about it and not been exposed to it. I guess it's because in those days, there wasn't that much out on it. There definitely wasn't any books out to help a hypnotist if they got into a situation where the patient went back into a past life. There were no instructions at all. The only book out at that time was The Search for Bridie Murphy. That was along this line. And nowadays, that book would not even be published because it is so ordinary and simple compared to the things that have been discovered since. But in the 1960s, it was like a land-breaking case that somebody had reported going back into past lives with hypnosis. But that was the only book that was out at that time that was even related to what we were doing. Otherwise, we were just more or less on our own. And in those days, the methods of hypnosis were very simple. and complicated and drawn out. We had to use the method that's called watch the shiny object, where you would hang something dangling shiny in front of the person, have them watch it and tell them their eyes were getting tired, and then the long drawn out inductions, which I call relaxing the person from the big toe all the way up their body. The long drawn out techniques. And then they had a lot of testing that was done to see what level of trance the person was in. All of this took a lot of time. Nowadays, it's not done anymore. At least I hope it isn't done anymore. It shouldn't be, because there are so many easier and simpler ways of doing this now that weren't around in those days. But now we discover we don't need all those long, drawn-out ways of doing hypnosis. But I speak now before boards of psychiatrists and hypnotists, and I teach my classes in hypnotism, and I still find people who are still using these old methods, and they're still being taught to watch the shiny, dangling object in front of the person and the test to see where they are. And that's all they had in those days. But anyway, as we worked with this woman, we were off onto our first adventure, because after that, I guess more curiosity than anything else, we kept taking her back again and again to see where she was going to go. Incidentally, she was helped with her weight and the kidney problem, but our curiosity, we wanted to keep seeing where she was going. So she ended up going through 5 different lifetimes. And many different places. It wasn't just in Chicago. She ended up in Germany, living in a castle. And she was in Ireland as a ordinary housewife over there, married to a shoe cobbler. She went through 5 different lifetimes, back to where she was created by God. And can you imagine, with no background in any of this, to hear all of this was totally amazing. And we had no instructions to tell us what to do. So it was just writing our own rules as we went along. And all of this was recorded on the portable tape recorder of the day. Portable. It's quite different than by standards nowadays. Those of you who know about these things will remember the portable tape recorders of those days were huge, with the big 8 to 10 inch reels. It was big reels of tape that had to be put on, and they would record several hours. But that thing is very heavy and hard to lift and carry around. So we had that set up in our house. So when we had the sessions, they were done on this huge portable tape recorder. And the people on the base, a lot of them knew what we were doing, and they became interested in it. Now, they didn't know who the woman was, and we protected her identity because this was so strange. We didn't want to affect her or affect her husband as a naval personnel. So we didn't tell anyone who the woman was. But when they began to find out what we were doing, they would come to our house once a week and say, well, what's the latest chapter? And we would play it for them. And everybody was just astounded and fascinated. It was like this was so totally new to everybody. And so they knew what we were doing. Then a disaster hit that changed our lives forever about this time. Now, like I said, my husband had just come back from Vietnam. And he was on his way to work one night to the base, and he was almost killed in a horrible car accident where he was hit head-on on the highway going to the base by a drunken officer, a Navy officer. He had been drinking at the O Club on the base and was on his way home. And he went over the line, and we had a head-on collision with my husband. My husband ended up being pinned into the wreckage. He was driving a Volkswagen bus, and he was just ground into the wreckage because there's no motor in the front of those cars. And the only thing that saved his life that night was because there was the car behind him, there was a Navy corpsman who had just returned from Vietnam. And this black man knew all about the emergency treatments for trauma because he had been over there. If he hadn't have been on the scene, Johnny might have died right there. But he was able to save his life until the helicopters could come from the base to try to help. They had the fire trucks there, and they had to try to get him out of that wreckage. As it was, he lost all of the blood in his body, but they managed to get into the base, and he was, they had to put him on O blood because it, the universal donor, because he needed to have all the blood in his body completely replaced. But he ended up being crushed into the wreckage. And he spent a month in intensive care, in and out of consciousness. Most of the time, he didn't even know where he was. He had had some brain concussions, and his face had also been torn up. So it was a horrible accident. But that night, they came and got me, and I went to the hospital. And the five different doctors came out, one after the other, was telling me different reasons why there was no way he could possibly live through the night, that it was just too severe, too much trauma. But I knew differently because when I was working with this woman, we were experimenting. We didn't know what you could do and what you couldn't do because we'd never had any experience with it. There was nothing to tell us what you couldn't do. Part of our experimentation, we took her into the future to see what we were going to be doing in the future. Well, she saw us living in the country, very much like where we live now, up in the country, and she saw us with grandchildren, which we didn't have at that time. We had a big family, but none of them were married yet. She saw us in living in the country with grandchildren. Well, that night when he was telling us this, the different doctors were saying all the different things that could kill my husband during the night, I couldn't believe it because I knew we had stumbled onto something that was so big and important that I had to believe it, even though it was strange. If I had to believe it, I had to believe it all. And part of what we were told was the way God really was and how he was love. And I just knew that he was not going to die that night. How could he die if she saw him in the future? So as each one of them was telling me what was going to happen, I told them, no, he's not. He's going to be all right. Finally, they just shook their heads and they said, well, if you believe in it that much, maybe it'll happen. Maybe it'll be all right. So Johnny was in intensive care for a month, in and out of consciousness. Then after that, he was in a body cast for 8 months. So most of the year, he spent in the hospital in a body cast where he couldn't move. And I can't even imagine how awful that would have to be to not be able to move. But they kept calling him the miracle man because they said there was no way he could have gotten through all of this. But the important part of all of this that I usually like people to know is that because the people on the base knew what we were doing, they kept saying this was our punishment. This was God punishing us. We were doing something we weren't supposed to be doing. We were peering around corners into the unknown and the hidden. Reincarnation, for goodness sakes, you know, work of the devil. And so this was God's way of punishing us. Of course, I could only shake my head at their ignorance, but I could not believe that. I knew God wouldn't punish us. He wouldn't want to punish us for just asking questions and wanting to find answers. that just wasn't the way the God that I knew would work. So I couldn't believe that what was happening to us, horrible as it was punishment by any creator being. So it ended up then, after a year in the hospital, he was put out of the Navy as a disabled veteran. We had to go somewhere, so we moved into the country, into the hills of Arkansas. We had a big family. We had to go somewhere where you could live on little money and a place where we could be out in the country, where we could grow things. That was our desire anyway. But he was put out of the Navy, and we moved to Arkansas. And here he spent 25 years in a wheelchair. He could get outside with crutches, and he could drive a hand-controlled car. But the rest of his life was disabled by living, you know, in the wheelchair. Of course, he rebuilt his life. He became the veteran service officer for the county. He was very active in ham radio. So he built a life of his own, but it was, our whole world was totally turned upside down at that time. Now I'm glad that we live in the country, because I travel all over the world and I'm in these energies with the cities and all of the people, of the traffic. I don't like that anymore. I like to get back here where I can recharge my batteries by being out in the country, away from those discordant energies. I could rebuild myself and recharge my batteries. So it turned out to be a very perfect place to live. But in the beginning, we didn't know that. We just moved here because it was going to be a cheap way to live without having to spend a lot of money. But all of my work with the hypnosis and traveling back into the past, it had done something to me. It had planted something there that I would never forget, that I wanted to know more. The story of all of this, about my beginnings, is told in the very first book that I ever wrote. The book is called Five Lives Remembered. And that book has never been published. Now, I don't know if it ever will be, because the things I've discovered since then have been so powerful and different and unique that I don't know if that one needs to be published or not. But it was the stories of our beginning, and it is mentioned in several of my other books. And when I lecture now at writers' conferences, people say, you know, they're there because they have written one book. They want to know what to do with it. I tell them, writing one book is the answer, because often that one book may not be the one that's published. That sometimes a publisher will like your style of writing, but then he'll say, do you have anything else? And if all you have is just one book, what are you going to do? Tell them. That's all you have. So with me, anyway, the first book was never published. And even though I tried, I sent it out many places, thought it was unique. But my life went on into many more adventures. And now it seems kind of simple and ordinary, what we found. But that's the way the life has taken a turn, anyway. All right, but that was that first book. But during that time, I had to forget all about hypnosis. I had to forget about reincarnation and all of these adventures, because I had to rebuild my life. Everything was completely turned upside down. I had to been given the responsibility of the family, because my husband went into a very black depression where he didn't want anything to do with anyone. And he really cut out a lot of his family as he went inward. His life was over, he thought. His career was over. Everything had changed too much. It took him many years to come to terms with all of this and to readjust. But during that time, I was busy taking care of him and raising my family. So all of the thoughts about the adventures, and the hypnosis had to go on the back burner while I did all of this. Living in the country, trying to raise a garden. Now I say it's like living. I've lived many lives in this one life because I've taken so many twists and turns along the way. Everybody's life can do that. When I'm at lectures now, some people tell me, my life is over. My children are grown. They're out of the house. My life is over. And I said, no, it's not. Your life could take a 180-degree turn, go off in a totally new direction, off into something you would never have even imagined. And you don't know what your life's going to be. You have to be open to adventure, to anything. And it could be totally different, and that was what happened to me. The life went off in a totally different direction than I could have ever imagined. But it was about 10 years, anyway, before I was able to really get back into this. That happened when all of my kids were beginning to leave home. They were getting married. They were going off to college. It's what you call the empty nest syndrome. They were all leaving, and it was like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? The empty nest syndrome. What I chose to do is not what the average mother, grandmother decided to do. I wanted to get back into hypnosis. I wanted to get back into what I had discovered. It was like a door had been opened and then suddenly just slammed shut because I had not been able to pursue it. And I knew there was something else there. And that was what I wanted to get back into. But by that time, I knew there had to be easier ways of doing hypnosis. The old ways were too long, drawn out, too time-consuming. I knew there had to be an easier way to do it. So I began to study the newer methods. And this was 30 years ago. That's how long I've been active now in the past life regression. Was been 30 years ago. It was at the end of the 70s when I began to get into this. I began to study the new techniques. The new techniques now use imagery and visualization to put the person into the relaxed level. It's not done with watching the shiny object and the long drawn out inductions or the tests that are performed by so many different hypnotists. Now it's much easier. So as I learned these techniques, then I began to apply them. The strange thing is, people said, where in the world did I find the people to work with here in the hills of Arkansas? Huntsville is the closest town. I live out on the top of a mountain in the middle of nowhere out here with peace and serenity. But the nearest town is Huntsville. It only has 2,000 people. There's only 10,000 people in the entire county because it's mostly composed of national forests. The biggest city is 28 miles away, which is Fayetteville. But people said, where in the world did I find all of these people that I've written about in my book? That was what was strange, and that shows there must have been a sense of destiny, a reason why all of these things began to happen, why we were put in this position. Now I know you, things happen because they're supposed to happen and you can't fight it anyway. But at that time I didn't know what was going on anyhow. But the people began to come to me and they just wanted to have sessions. In those days I didn't charge anything because I was just experimenting and seeing where it was going to go. And they began going into interesting past lives. I was not so much into the therapy part at that time as I was just trying to discover history. As I said earlier, I'm not a psychic, and I don't channel. I consider myself to be the reporter, the investigator, the researcher of lost knowledge, because I soon found that the material I was getting from these different people that just came from nowhere to my house and the groups I was going to it to, I used to go to metaphysical meetings, I soon found the information I was getting was not normal past lives. I was getting what I call lost history. This has been what I've done ever since, the whole 30 years since then. Information that's either been lost, forgotten, or never known in the first place. And this is what I bring back to our time, or I'm trying to do it anyway, to bring back to our time. So I work with the lost information, and that's what I try to do. And these people began to go back into very interesting past lives. And I know the skeptics are always saying the person will be Cleopatra or Napoleon, always somebody famous. I have never found this. And I belong to different hypnosis groups now, and I don't know any other hypnotists who have found this either. We have found many, many of the lives have been very dull and boring and normal. You got to remember there's a whole lot more normal people out there, common people, ordinary people, than there are those that are famous. How many people in the world today get their names in the newspaper, are there so that people can identify them? Majority of the people that are around today and that have been around forever are just ordinary people living ordinary lives. I call, when they go back to these kind of lives, I call them digging potatoes lives, because that's maybe the most interesting thing they do. They live in the country, they're a farmer, and they just farm. And very little happens in a life like that that is even eventful. So it's hard to find anything that is even important in that lifetime. But this makes it more and more validity, because this is the way most people's lives are. My job is to find out why they were shown that life and what it has to do with their lives now. The reason why that one life was picked. And usually in my work now, it will show something connecting with the life at this time. But as I began to work on this, I began to develop my own technique of hypnosis, and it's different than the other ones that are taught out there. I keep thinking now, after 30 years of using this technique, of perfecting it, and specializing in it and honing it and working out all of the bugs, I keep thinking someone somewhere had to learn hypnosis in the first place. Somebody had to figure out how to do this. Now, that doesn't mean their methods or techniques is the only way it can be done. That isn't the only way. Somebody had to do it. And a lot of the ones who are taught hypnosis are taught, this is the way you do it. Don't make any deviations. Don't make any corrections. Do it word for word. I've had some people tell me they have to read from a script, and they cannot deviate from that script at all. They just have to keep on with it. You know, if they can't use their own mind as far as coming up with ideas of how to do this. The main thing is, once you understand what it's doing, how you're working with the mind, how you're working with the subconscious, as long as you understand that, and the main thing is you're not going to hurt the person, then you're free to experiment. And that's what I have done, and I have developed my own technique. And it's different, because I found a way to contact the subconscious mind directly and to have access to tremendous amounts of information. That is the technique that I use. Now, there are many levels of trance. These can be measured. They can be measured by machines to see the different levels of trance. The lighter levels the person will get information. If you take them into a past life, they will get information, because we've all had hundreds and hundreds of lives, are going to get something. But in the lighter levels, they feel they are watching it, and not a participant, but more or less watching it happen. And the conscious mind is very active, and it's sitting there saying, oh, you're making all this up. You know, you read it in a book. You saw it in a movie. Oh, this is silly. What do you think you're doing? And so afterwards, they have a lot of doubt about it, because they said they remembered everything about it, and it were objective. These are the lighter levels of trance. What I found that I like to work in is called the somnambulistic level. The somnambulistic level of trance is the deepest possible level of trance. When the person enters the somnambulistic level, they don't remember anything. When they wake up, they will say, oh, I must have fallen asleep. I don't remember anything. And they think they were only asleep for just 15 minutes at the most. But yet I have 2 hours of tape there. They don't remember anything at all. Now, when they become the somnambulistic state, and they travel back into time the way I do to take them back into past lives, I call it time travel, like going through a time tunnel, because we are actually traveling back to that time. If you go back into time with the somnambulistic level, the person becomes the other personality totally. This life disappears. They have no memory of this life at all. They are the other personality. If you were to bring up an object or anything that's in our time period but does not exist in their time period, they don't even know what you're talking about, and you have to explain things to them. One example is many, many of the clients I've had, if they go back into the Middle Ages and they're describing something, and I say, is it glass? They don't know what glass is. And try to explain something that is so simple to us, a simple, ordinary object. Try to explain that to somebody who has no idea what you're talking about. It's hard, especially off the top of your head. But they become the other personality so much, that so closely identified with it, that they are able to get all of the history, the feelings, the theology, anything that the person of that time was associated with. Of course, even at a somnambulistic level, if they were not in a position to know something, they can't tell it to you. The farmer in the field is not going to know what the king in the palace knows. So even though they became the person, sometimes the information is very dull and boring because there's nothing there. It's just a simple lifetime. So when you take them back, I never know what I'm going to get. And they become this personality totally. And that is the level that I like to work in. Now, the somnambulistic level is not unusual. A lot of people think hypnosis is strange and scary because they don't understand what it is. And, of course, the movies and the TV haven't helped with this. What people don't realize, I've had clients come to me and say, oh, I don't think I can be hypnotized. What they don't realize is that you are hypnotized most of the day, and you don't even realize it. It's absolutely impossible for you to stay in the wide awake state. You will go in and out of these different altered states all during the day, because this is the way the mind functions, especially alpha, which is the lightest level. Beta is the one that you're in whenever you are supposedly awake, and alpha is where you enter in the lightest level. You will enter that level naturally when you pray and when you meditate, because it kind of shuts things out. But there are deeper levels beyond that. But alpha is the one you shift in and out of all the time. And this is a very common state of hypnosis that people don't realize. One thing, if you're driving and you're driving down the road and you're so intent on that yellow line that the next thing you know, you get where you're going, but you don't even remember passing certain landmarks. This is called road hypnosis. It's a wonder we don't have more accidents than we do, because you actually do enter an altered state and travel without really being fully awake. Another way is if you're in an office and you have to learn how to shut out all the noise around you to concentrate on your job, you entered an altered state so that you can close off these things. And also if you're in church or at a lecture and you begin to doze off, you're also entering an altered state. They have proved that it is absolutely impossible for you to stay in the wide awake beta state. Anytime you watch TV or if you're reading a book, you get so involved in it that you're feeling the emotions and you're laughing and crying with the book or the movie, and someone can walk into the room and you don't even pay attention to them. You have entered an altered state at that time also. But they have proved that you cannot stay wide awake. One experiment they did, they hooked people up with wires with their brain to the TV set. They said the TV set will only stay on as long as you are wide awake. And people said, well, I know I'm wide awake whenever I watch TV. But nobody could keep the TV on more than 60 seconds. That's how quickly you enter the altered state once you become focused on something like the television. And you know, the people who make the programs, especially the people who make the commercials, know that. They know that you are in an altered state when you're watching the TV, and during that time, subliminal suggestions can be put into your mind, you know, like buy our product is good for you, etc., etc. Now all these things about this medicine will do this and that, this prescription, go and get the prescription. It's all subliminally aimed at the part of your mind that is very suggestible when you're watching the television. One thing I do, I always mute it during the commercials. I go and get a drink of water or something. So we don't have to be there and be influenced in that way. But you are in and out of the hypnosis level all day long. You just cannot be wide awake. So all the hypnotist does is take this natural state of the mind and use it for therapy. And that is what I do. But the somnambulistic level is the deepest. It's down around theta, because after alpha, beta, theta, the next step beyond that is delta, and that is when you fall asleep and you are asleep. But when you go into the somnambulistic level, you do this twice during the day. You have to do it. You enter the somnambulistic level twice. You enter it at night when you're falling asleep, and when you're waking up in the morning, you are in and out of this altered level that is the somnambulistic level, because the next step is falling asleep and then coming from sleep to the waking state. That is the somnambulistic level. That is the level that I use, that I like to work with. The technique that I developed takes the person into the somnambulistic level. We block out the conscious mind interference. As I said, it's there kibitzing at you and jabbering at you, trying to get you to listen. Anybody who has ever tried meditation knows this. You're sitting there trying to meditate, and your conscious mind is jabbering away, and it's saying, there's 100 different things you need to be doing besides sitting here watching you trying to be quiet like this. You know, 100 different things you need to be doing. So the conscious mind will always try to get into the act. I guess it doesn't like to be ignored. It wants to be in control. So when you start these things, it will start jabbering at you. So it's very important for the hypnotist to remove that conscious mind interference, push it aside, push it out of the way, so that it cannot interfere with what we're doing. Because I found by going into the somnambulistic level and by contacting the subconscious mind directly, we can have access to all information, and we can actually have therapy that can help cure the person of any ailments, diseases, illnesses. We've had a great deal of success with these things, and we can find the answers to most of their problems by removing the conscious mind interference and taking them back in the somnambulistic level. So that is what I've developed a way of doing. Now, the hypnotists say that normally a person will go into a somnambulistic level. This is when you're inducing the trance and when you're doing the hypnosis. Normally, the person will go into the somnambulistic level. It would be 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 30 people will just automatically do it. But with the technique that I developed, it's the other way around. Either 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 30 will not go into the somnambulistic level. You see the amount of valuable information you can get that way by putting them down so low that they remove the conscious mind interference. And I believe that what I've discovered is very valuable and very important. This is why now I'm teaching it all over the world. I've been doing this hypnosis now with the past life therapy and the past life regressions. I've been doing it now for 30 years. I have worked with thousands and thousands of people all over the world. And I just did a radio show the other night where somebody was the narrator was trying to convince me that this was work of the devil, that it was demons possessing the person, that there was no such thing as reincarnation. And, of course, I don't know where he was coming from, but I figure there's a lot of fear there and ignorance because they've not done their research. But out of these thousands and thousands of people, I have yet to find anyone who has not had a past life, somewhere, sometime. So I think that should be enough proof, if you want, that reincarnation is real. But you know what they say, no amount of proof will ever be enough for a true skeptic. And a believer does not need any proof. But I have had such wonderful cases and wonderful adventures that I know it's real. Because if you do thousands of people, and many of them are in the same time period, they're reporting the same events, the same things in everyday life, to me, it's real because I know it, because there I have no doubt at all with thousands of people. There's plenty of validation to back me up. One of the books I'm working on, I've just finished a new book, and it's part of the Convoluted Universe series. But one of the books I'm working on three at the same time, and I hardly ever work on one at a time. Whichever book is finished first is the next book to be published. But one of the books that I'm working on is History as It Really Was, because I'm finding out what has come down to us through the history books is not really exactly the way history happened. That is what I'm focusing on, trying to get back lost history, lost knowledge, by comparing what people say in different time periods. And there's other books I'm working on, too, so I know I'm going to be writing for many, many years. I'm not finished by a long shot, anyway. But that is what I'm doing now, is teaching this technique. In the beginning, you know, the psychiatrists and the psychologists and the people who were in the audience said, oh, past life regression is just for New Age kooks. there isn't anything really to it. But now, as we've been going on through many years and finding out what you can actually do with these deep trance levels and with past life regression, they are learning how to do it. They said it doesn't matter if they believe in reincarnation or not. If it helps the patient, that is the main thing. So they're studying it now and adding it to their repertoire of the things that they can do. So it is beginning to move out and to affect more and more people. And I'm now teaching my technique all over the world. And I've had psychiatrists who come and take my classes. It's spreading and things are happening. We're learning to know how powerful the mind really is. Well, I'm going to be running out of time today, but I wanted to give you this background on myself so you will know where I'm coming from and what the next shows will be about. I want to give out my 800 number and my website in case you want to find out more about my books and more about the things that I'm talking about. The 800 number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. And our website is named after the name of my company. My company is Ozark Mountain Publishing. And its website is an abbreviation of Ozark Mountain. www.ozarkmt.com. ozarkmt.com. But now I have my own publishing company and I am publishing many, many other authors. So in the next shows to come, in addition to my talking about my work with UFOs, ETs, life after death, the prophecies of Nostradamus, there's in the convoluted universe series where there was just complicated metaphysics. In addition to that, I will also be interviewing some of our other authors that we have published, and their work is also equally fascinating. So I'm looking forward to being with you on future shows.
You've been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.